It is about time that some advertiser gets it right, that that's what being a dad is all about. So I thought you guys might appreciate that. Okay, a few announcements to knock out here. First off, when you came in, you should have gotten a survey. Did anybody not receive one of these surveys? Okay, survey, raise your hand nice and high if you didn't. Okay. With that survey, there are pens in the pews in front of you, so if you want to grab a pen and fill that out, and if you don't want to fill it out, that's fine, but there's incentive. At the end, if you take your survey to the registration table, Chick-fil-A has donated either a free 8-count nugget or chicken strip card that will be given, so a little blackmail. Turn in your survey and you get one of those cards. It says name is optional on there, but come on, man up. I would really, if you want to be talked to about this, I mean, this is no secret here. If you didn't like one of the sessions, that's totally fine. But I would like to find out to get input for making this better next year and improving upon it. So if it is, I'd like to talk to you if there's something you think you want. So just put a little notation if you maybe want to clarify through a conversation. But I'd appreciate your help in filling that out. Secondly, I am missing something. Insert your own joke, but I am missing our sign-up sheets that were on the registration table. So I'm thinking either Kelly's lying to me that he put it there, or somebody put their stuff down and grabbed our sign-up sheets. So if you can go through and just check, we have a couple of sign-up sheets. One is if you want to be added to our email list, and the other one is the sign-up for paintball. If you have those, please return them to the registration table, and there will be no questions asked. But we could use that. But I do want to give a couple of announcements right now. First one I would like to mention is paintball. And we got that coming up October 25th. This is something we're doing. It's a it's going to be an all-day thing. And there's different price packages. It's all on the table out there that explains it. It's this Christian paintball place. I don't know if anybody has ever been up there, but I'm hearing great things about it. That's a place we need to go to. And, thank you. And this is a family event. So if you're looking to take some anger out on your wife, just make sure you're on opposing teams. And but this is for kids, too. Teenage and up can be a part of this. So it's a men's event, but it's going to be for family. So the more information is out there. A lot more is going to be coming, details on that. If you're not from our church, that's totally fine. You want to piggyback on this, we can all go up there together and just shoot each other. So that's coming up. I want to introduce you to someone who came today that I got the chance to meet a week ago. And Bob, if you'd make your way up here. And I got to meet Bob, and he's got an event coming up. When we're talking about influence in the workplace, this is an opportunity to use some of that. So Bob has come in and is going to share about something we have going on.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. Hasn't this been great? I mean, I'm just blown away by the ideas that I got today, and I hope we can take them out of here and take them into the spots that we're involved in, because it's all about valuing people, like David said in our last session. So I have an event that I'm a table host at, and who in the room has heard of a guy named Joe Gibbs? Raise your hand. Okay, a lot of older guys like me, but you younger guys, you might have heard of them through NASCAR, because Joe Gibbs, his teams have won 3 NASCAR championships. So I have the privilege of bringing you this information that he's going to be in town speaking in Schaumburg at the Meadows Club in Schaumburg, October 15th. In the morning, the doors open at 6:30, and he'll be speaking at 7 o'clock. There'll be a breakfast. He'll share his testimony. And talk about struggles. He's had struggles in his life. Last year, he came to Chicago and spoke. There were 1,000 people there. 300 of them indicated that they wanted a relationship with Jesus Christ. Now, again, that's because you guys have been doing something in somebody's life, like David said. You've said hi to somebody, you encourage somebody, you're building a relationship with somebody you work with, or you're in your neighborhood. So I'm asking you to risk it, because this is a great opportunity. This isn't church. This is asking somebody to come and hear Joe tell the struggles he's had, even though when you look at his credentials, he's probably one of the most successful guys that we know in this world. Three Super Bowl championships and three NASCAR championships. But he'll tell you, honestly, that without Christ, none of that would have been possible. So I'll be outside along with my point man, David Poznanski. David, even though you're tall, I want you to stand up, just so everybody knows who this guy is, to give you an opportunity to purchase a table there and cast nets, risk it, like David was saying. Go out of your way. Don't make a sin of omission because you didn't pray with somebody or say hi to somebody. So this is an opportunity for you guys to cast nets and do a little risk. And we have these flyers that I'll have outside that you can invite people to this event. Or you may want to buy a table, invite your company to come. Like we had a guy last week. He's inviting his whole company to come to this event. So thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Did you guys vote to take the microphone away from me? Thank you, Bob. It was a pleasure to meet Bob, and I look forward to having a working relationship with him going forward, because he puts on these events that take the pressure off of us to maybe get into someone's life and talk to them. Maybe kind of it's become just a clanging cymbal to some of the people we talk to all the time. By bringing in guys like Joe Gibbs to speak to our guys, that's really going to have an effect. Pastor Darrell, would you make your way up here, please? Pastor Darrell is going to share something that we've got going on for small groups for the church and specifically for the men.
Okay. First of all, I just want to say thank you to Mark and his team for running today. Can we just let him know how much we appreciate this? I love when men in the church rise up and they just run with something. And Mark, I applaud you. You are not only a man's man, but you lead us well. So thank you, Mark, very much, and your team. And thanks for coming and being a part of this today as well. About a year ago, I had a book that I needed to read because somebody I knew wrote it, and I was about to see them, and so I knew they were going to ask if I liked the book. I didn't really want to read the book, and I didn't want to read it so bad that I had to drive to Duluth. So you know what? I bought it actually on Audible, and I'm like, he had already given me a copy, but I bought it on Audible. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to listen to it as I drive so I can talk to him about it. And I just have to tell you, I was so deeply impacted as I'm listening. Not only did it bring tears to my eyes, when I would stop for gas, I couldn't get out of the car. I kept listening. In fact, you're not supposed to keep the car running, but I did. I just, and I kept the volume up so I could hear it. I even got to where I was going in Duluth. I just sat in the driveway and listened to it. And I wanted to share the message of the book with you. It's a book by Brady Boyd called Sons and Daughters. And I've been thinking about how we can do this as a sermon series in our church. And it's actually about spiritual orphans finding their way home. And I thought I didn't really need this book. I grew up in a great home. I had a dad who loved me. I didn't think this was really for me. And yet, I find that a lot of times I'm living like an orphan. Many of you know Jared Anderson, who led worship here a couple times, was at Ascension Convention, was here last Easter, led worship. And the story of him just taking these kids from Haiti and wanting to bring them into his home. He's adopting these kids from Haiti, and it was a long process, and I got to see him last week in Colorado. They're at his home. They got to pick him up a couple weeks ago, and they're so excited. And with orphans, there's two things that happen when they bring an orphan into a home. One is they're just going to kind of blow it up because they're like, you know what? If you're going to reject me, let's just get this over with. Let's get this over with. Send me back, and I'll be. So it's just this attitude that comes out. The other kind of response is that, well, I'm going to be really good, and I'm going to perform so that these people will keep me and they won't send me home. And it's usually one of those two responses that orphans have, and those are responses we have to God. That's the prodigal son and the older brother, isn't it? It's like, I'm either going to just forget it, God, or I'm going to be so good, you have to love me. And we're not living in the freedom and the fulfillment and the love of God because he's adopted us. Like Jared said before they ever got the kids home when he was here, he said, look, everything I have already belongs to these kids. I love them already, even before they're mine. And now that they're mine, I can't describe the love that I have for them. And God has that kind of love for you. So I can't wait to talk about it from God's Word on the weekends. And then we're going to have small groups, sons and daughters small groups throughout the church. And there's going to be one specifically for men, because there are some issues with dads that men have, and it's important for guys to get together. Now, there's other groups for women and couples and singles and young and old. And there's going to be a lot of different groups you can sign up for here at church. But there's a specific men's group, and I believe it's Wednesday nights, right? You're going to actually be meeting in Kelly's garage. That's where kind of most of the men's things happen nowadays. It's just a couple blocks away from here. Your kids can go to Awana, they can go to youth group on Wednesday night, and then men just kind of head over there if you want to. I'm going to be doing one for couples if you want to come to one for couples on a Wednesday night, but I want you to get involved with a small group because I believe this has the power to transform your life. We're going to have books available in the lobby as well starting next week. Thrilled to have Garth with us this weekend, so if you want to hear Garth, please come out this weekend, but starting next week, and this is a guy's book because the chapters are one page long. I love that. Just one page, maybe two. It's awesome. You're going to enjoy it. And thanks, Mark, for letting me share that.
Thanks. Okay, one final announcement before we get back to Garth. We were up at Iron Sharpens Iron earlier this year. How many guys went to Iron Sharpens Iron up in Beloit? All right, all the guys in the back row. I don't know, was that a session? How to not be seen? But good to have you guys up there. When we went up there, that was a great time. And one of the breakout sessions was led by the guy who I'm introducing now, Scott Phelps. And without me saying a lot about why he's here, what he went up front and talked to kind of give a little overview of what his session was about, I knew I had to be there. And as being a father of daughters, especially, I knew I needed to be there. And I'm so thankful that I was. And so then I talked to him afterwards, found out he's a block away from the church. So I'll reimburse you for mileage for coming over here. So I just want to introduce you. We have our men's breakfast coming up in November on the 8th, my anniversary. I know you guys all have that marked down, so just add the breakfast to it. But Scott will be speaking that morning, and he's just going to come now and introduce what he's going to be talking about that day.
Thanks so much, Mark. Yeah, I met Mark up at the Iron Sharpens Iron Conference, and really good to meet you. I literally do live across the street. And I was just sitting out on the deck with my boys just now having a Bible study, my 16-year-old twin boys. But the saddest verse, I think one of the saddest verses in the Bible is Judges 2:10. Do you know Judges 2:10? Joshua and that generation were gathered to their fathers, and there arose a new generation after them who did not know the Lord or the things that they had done for Israel. And the reason why that's so sad is because Joshua and Caleb represented really, and that you could say the greatest generation. They were the generation that settled the land, right? They crossed the Jordan River. They felled the walls of Jericho. They defeated the Canaanites. They settled the land, right? And they did what the first generation failed to do. And you remember that Deuteronomy chapter 5 is the giving of the law. But you say, well, now, wait a minute. They already had the law in Exodus 20. Why are they doing it again in Deuteronomy 5? Well, that's the point of Deuteronomy. Deuonomos means second law. Moses gives the law a second time in Deuteronomy chapter 5 for the second generation because the first generation didn't do it. So the second generation was the good generation. They did it. They were the greatest generation. Crossed the Jordan River, settled the land. But what they didn't do at the end of the book of Joshua, the beginning of the book of Judges, is they didn't transmit God's truth to their kids. And the whole book of Deuteronomy is a warning, 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 warning. You're about to go over into Paganville. And if you go into Paganville and you don't lock your kids into God's word, you're going to lose them. They didn't lock their kids into God's word, and they did lose them. They said in Deuteronomy, Moses said over and over, when you go in there, tear down their altars. Because what's going to happen is your kids are going to get hooked up into the idols and the gods of the culture if you aren't intentional. So Deuteronomy chapter 6 then is the Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one Lord. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And you make sure to teach this, what this, verse chapter 5, God's word, the Ten Commandments. Make sure to teach this to your kids. They didn't do it. And Judges 2:10 is, in my estimation, one of the saddest verses in the Bible, because a whole generation grew up who never got taught God's word, who never got locked into a genuine relationship with God. And the book of Judges reads like an R-rated movie. It's a hard book to write. The book of Judges is, to me, one of the hardest books in the Bible to read. Sometimes I read Judges like I'm watching a horror movie, like, I'm turning away. I'm hiding my eyes. I don't want to see what's there. Because everyone did what was right in their own eyes. They weren't following the Lord. I fear we're on the verge of a Judges 2:10 moment in our culture. I fear that we're losing our kids. I fear that our kids are following after the world. See, we teach sexual purity in public schools all over the nation. We've reached over 1 million kids over the last decade. We go all over the country training up public school teachers how to reach their kids. But what I'm concerned is not so much about what's happening in the public school, is I'm concerned about what are we doing in the church. Because I think the greatest mistake that we can make is that to believe that our kids somehow, by process of osmosis, believe what we believe. See, when we grew up, many of us, when we grew up, we understood, we knew that sex should be reserved for marriage. We understood that if we were sexually active outside of marriage, we were crossing some sort of moral boundary. Guess what? That boundary isn't there anymore. Kids today don't even know that you should wait until you're married. Like, if you talk to kids about waiting until you're married to have sex, they're like, wait, what? What did you just say? Could you back up and go over that again? I've never heard this before. And so our kids today, you can't assume, my point is, that your kids have a biblical worldview of sex and marriage. You can't assume that. Chances are, if you haven't taught it to them, they don't know it. They're not getting it in schools. In many cases, they're not getting it in church. And they're certainly not getting it in the media, which is the world in which they live, right? So what I'm going to do when I'm here is challenge you and equip you and help you to make sure that you are infusing your faith into your kids, particularly in the area of sex and marriage and why it's so important that they understand and values. And it's not just the culture. Our kids today aren't sexually active because they necessarily want to be. Our kids today are getting swept away by a Miley Cyrus culture. That's just the world that they live in, and no one's ever told them any differently, and even church kids, Christian kids, are getting swept up into this. I sometimes have a harder time with a group of church kids than I do with a group of public school kids. Where are your kids at? Do you know? Have you talked to them? And I'm not even talking about having a sex talk so much as I am having a relationship with God talk. See, the sex part is simply the fruit, the outcome of the general relationship part. But it's not just the culture, it's our government is going, you don't even know what your schools are teaching. You don't even know what's happening in the public schools today. If I were to tell you what schools are teaching your kids, you would be shocked. We've been fighting against this in Springfield. We fight against this in Washington, D.C. There is so much that we as Christians need to be aware of and involved in. I want to challenge you about some of that. So I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks or months, whatever it is.
Thank you. All right. I appreciate Scott coming over for this. I know he's got stuff going on today. It's kind of like on Letterman when he tells that first guest he's got to leave. He's got other engagements. Well, that's kind of what Scott's doing right now, but I appreciate him coming out to this. All right, I'm not going to talk anymore. I want to give Garth his full time, so we'll go a few minutes over time so Garth can share his heart. So come on up. Welcome, Garth.
Thank you. Did I not turn on? Am I on? I'm on. All right. Real quick, if you are new to the area or you're looking for a church or you don't know much about Christian life, we'd love to invite you to tonight's service, and it's at 6, correct? And tomorrow's service is at 9:30. Or maybe if you're struggling in your life, I'm going to be sharing tonight and tomorrow about how to put the power back in your relationship with Christ. And I feel like it's one of those messages that God just gives you. You don't really study. He just kind of drops it in on you and things kind of make sense. So we'd invite you to be a part of that. If you have a church, please go to it, but still send your tithes here. And how many of you enjoyed the day so far? It's been great. Yeah. Sat in on Dave's session this morning first and didn't know that anything about your testimony. That was fantastic. Then sat in on D'Angelo's. Is he here this morning? Or he already? Yep. Excellent. It made me so hungry. I want to go out and have some Giordano's pizza. I'm just kidding. Okay. I'm kidding. No, great. I really appreciated your transparency. You just got me when you started talking. When you started talking about your son. So thank you for being open about that. Life is tough, isn't it? It can just suck the air out of you. I want to show you one of my favorite videos of all time. This is where he's yelling at his dad. Then his dad yells back at him. It's really a powerful video. It's really cool. And he's like, "You didn't serve me enough pizza. I asked for 5 pieces of pizza." He's like, Rocky's got that look like, "I didn't mean to eat it all." He's like, "You always eat all the pizza. You eat one more piece of pizza." Okay, we can just shut it down if it's not going to work, because there's really nothing worse than no video than a bad video. So, is there no sound? Are we did they leave the sound booth? Are they still back there? You're working on it, okay. Make sure you get it for the very end of the video, because that really truly makes it anticlimactic. So, you know, I put pizza right here in my hand, and I ate it, and I used to raise it up so you couldn't reach it. And, okay. Maybe the volume on the video, maybe the volume on the YouTube video isn't up.
And the time come for you to be your own man.
Yeah, can we start it over now?
And you did.
And action.
Now with all this going on, this is going to be worse than ever.
It don't have to be.
No, sure it does.
Why? You got a lot going on, kid.
Well, my last name? That's the reason I got a decent job. That's the reason why people deal with me in the first place. Now I start to get a little ahead. I start to get a little something for myself. And this happens. Now I'm asking you as a favor not to go through with this, okay? This is only going to end up bad for you, and it's going to end up bad for me.
You think I'm hurting you?
Yeah, in a way you are.
That's the last thing I ever wanted to do.
I know that's not what you want to do, but that's just the way that it is. Don't you care what people think? Doesn't it bother you that people are making you out to be a joke and that I'm gonna be included in that? Do you think that's right? Do you?
You ain't gonna believe this, but you used to fit right here. I'd hold you up and say to your mother, "This kid's gonna be the best kid in the world. This kid's gonna be somebody better than anybody ever knew." And you grew up good and wonderful. It was great just watching. Every day was like a privilege. Then the time come for you to be your own man and take on the world, and you did. But somewhere along the line, you changed. You stopped being you. You let people stick a finger in your face and tell you you're no good. And when things got hard, you started looking for something to blame, like a big shadow. Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is gonna hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth.
but you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
I'm always going to love you no matter what. No matter what happens. You're my son. You're my blood. You're the best thing in my life. But until you start believing in yourself, you ain't going to have a life. Don't forget to visit your mother.
Gets me every time, man. I got boys. When I was 17, I ran down a beach, dove into the water, broke my neck in three places. They had to put me in a halo vest, put the bolts in the head, the big body thing. It was horrible. It sucked. About 5 years later, I was lifting weights and had a spinal cord, not injury, but the disc in my neck where I broke it burst and caused my arms to go paralyzed. So they had to go in through the front of my neck, cut me open, suck out the disc, do some cleaning. Had another neck brace on for a few months. Had to really watch what I did. Had a lot of stuff taken away from me at that point. I loved the barefoot water ski and couldn't do that anymore. Couldn't shoot guns for a long time anymore because of they're afraid of the stress on your neck. That was a bummer. First 5 years of my marriage were horrible. My mom and dad, amazing people. I thought, I'm going to get married and my marriage is going to be just like my parents. No. My wife was an absolute psycho. She was sexually abused by four dads. And when we were dating, everything was great. And then we got married, and it was like literally you pushed a button. And she became the most insane person. I'd never met her. I was like, I don't even know who you are. One instance in the middle of all this going on, and you always come home, you don't know who you're going to meet, which wife is it going to be, you don't know how to cope. I'm 23, 24, I don't know, you know, I'm not talking to anybody about this because I'm just kind of ashamed and embarrassed, and we get into some argument, I'm not even sure what about, and I'm sitting on the couch watching TV just wanting to disappear, and she goes, I'm going to go to bed. She starts to go up the stairs and she turns around. She goes, if you go to sleep tonight, I'm going to take a knife out of the kitchen and I'm going to kill you. And I remember thinking, I do not know who this woman is, man. And life gets tough. So 8 years ago, I'm not feeling well. I'm losing weight, which is really bad if you like lifting weights, because especially if you're a power lifter. And going to the doctor. I started planting a church actually just about 18 months before that. And church planting is, it's brutal, man. I like to think of it like this. Pastors argue about the tip while church planters are paying the bill. Amen? There we go. Church planting is just, you just better have a set of strength on you, because it'll take it out of you. 18 months into it, struggling, working three jobs to pay the church's bills and my bills, and I find out I have colon cancer. And so you go through that. Halfway through it, it spreads throughout my lymph system. I have, at that time, 1, 2, 3 surgeries and 8 months of chemo. And I'm nobody special. You know, there's a lot of people who have cancer and have gone through things and much worse. get through that, feeling better. Church plants start to take a little bit of a turn upward, and you go in for your 15-month checkup. You're feeling good. I mean, I was feeling good. I was looking good, getting back. My strength was coming back up, lifting a lot of weight. Walk in there, and he goes, in fact, he literally, my oncologist just said, it's back. I was like, what's back? The McRib? Sweet, I love the McRib. And I'm like, what's back? You know, I mean, how do you start a conversation like that? And he said, your cancer's back. And it was a tiny little doctor's room. And I was sitting in a chair with my back to the wall. And I literally looked behind me because I didn't know who he was talking to. It's back. What's back? Your cancer's back. Are you talking to me? And he goes, we got to send you to a specialist. Came back in my liver. Sitting in a room with this specialist who shows you this DVD of your scan. And I'm sitting there with my wife. You know, cancer's hard, but it's really hard on your family. And if you've ever sat in a room with a doctor and he looks at you and he says, you've got about 5 years left. And you've got to sit and hold your wife's hand through that. That's brutal. Halfway through that, they said, you know, you had a 50% chance. Now you got a 21% chance. And then it went down to 11% chance. It had 7 more surgeries. And my gallbladder, a third of my liver, part of my stomach, and a part of my anus removed, and my appendix, 50 lymph nodes. And go through way more chemo. It's even more brutal than the chemo with colon. And it's hard, man. It can pummel you, like literally just not stop. And get done with that. Your church plant is just about dead. Just about, you know, not even barely breathing. You feel like every Sunday you have to go and try to resuscitate it. And you shut down, and then you go to a church, and the last year and a half, went to a church, poured my life into this church for this pastor, and they call you, and they say, yeah, we heard what you were saying about things going on here. I was on a phone call in my office, which I thought was private, talking to another pastor of a very large church, and he was asking me about the church I was working at now. And I said, man, it's messed up. I said, it's dysfunctional, it's messed up. This is kind of going on. I think maybe this is going on. And then later that day, I found out that the pastor's daughter-in-law was listening to my phone conversation and tattled on me. Said, did you say all this? Absolutely. You've got an hour to pack your stuff and leave. No severance, no nothing, just a swift boot in the butt, get out. Start planting a church again. The last 3-4 months I've been trying to, you know, get a church going again, plant. Smothered in medical bills, smothered in life bills of not having a real job for so many years over the last 8-9 years. And life can just beat the crap out of you. It can just be brutal. And if you haven't been there yet, enjoy today. Because it's coming. Something's coming. But hear me out. Hear me out. I sat in my living room yesterday with my wife, and we discussed about bankruptcy or losing the house or what we should do. In the last 8 months, I've sold guns, guitars. After my first bout with cancer, my dad bought me a new Harley. I had to sell it. So we sat in our house yesterday, and we're like, should we file bankruptcy? Should we foreclose the house? Should we just live in it until they kick us out? Should we do all these things? And at the end of the conversation, I said, you know what? I can say with a clear conscience, I am madly in love with Jesus, and you're madly in love with me. Nothing else really matters. The end of the day, it doesn't matter. And I'm not here to complain or ask for sympathy. I'm just here to tell you that if you talk about how hard life is, I get it. But nothing else matters. Love Jesus with everything. And if you're married, love your wife with everything. Your kids, love them if they're good. No, I'm kidding. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 3 through 6. And Paul, I love the books of Timothy because they're really to men. But Paul writes, join with me in the suffering. I love that. Join with me in suffering. Your neighbor calls you, hey, you want to suffer today with me? Not really. Join with me in suffering. Like a good soldier of Jesus Christ, no one serving as a soldier gets entangled in civilian affairs, but rather tries to please his commanding officer. Similarly, anyone who competes as an athlete does not receive the victor's crown except by competing according to the rules. The hardworking farmer should be the first to receive a share of the crops. Reflect on what I am saying, for the Lord will give you insight into all of this. Paul is making a statement here about what the Christian walk is like to men. He uses three examples. I love the fact that he doesn't use examples like, hey, remember, when we serve Christ, it's like winning the lottery and being born really good looking and having everything go easy for you. Or, you know, he picks the three examples in their culture that say, it's going to be tough. If you haven't figured it out yet, serving Jesus is tough. I think a lot of times men don't step up to the plate and serve God because we undersold it. We made it sound like come to Jesus and everything will be okay and it'll be better. No. You come to Jesus and all of a sudden the enemy pulls out his rifle and he's got crosshairs on you. I love Shackleton's journey. Great book. I read it. The thing that Shackleton did is he wanted to make a journey to Antarctica and back. And in the paper, he puts an ad and he's like, I'm not going to lie to anybody. He says, if you're looking for a job that's low pay, hard, brutal, probably get injured, it's probably kill you, you may not ever come back. This whole thing, prints it in the paper, and he's like, if I can get two guys, I'll be happy. The day the article came out, almost 90 men showed up. See, when I talk about Jesus to men, make no mistake, it's going to be hard. But it's so worth it. So Paul paints this picture with these three examples. I was thinking late last night, soldier is something you did but didn't want to do. Back then, you were told you were going to be a soldier. It's something you did but didn't want to do. An athlete was something you wanted to do but couldn't do. All of us want to be athletes. Let's get real. A farmer is something you did because you had to do. All of us are in all of those situations. There are things we really want to do, probably not going to happen in my lifetime. There are things I'm told I have to do, I don't want to, but I have to do them. And then there are things that I just do because that's what I have to do. So Paul uses these examples. I want to take a few minutes and just unpack it. I'm going to start with the farmer. He uses the example of a farmer, and my dad, I love him, God bless him, he had this crazy idea. He grew up farming. The problem was is that my grandpa, his father, couldn't even grow dirt. True story, after years and years of trying to farm, which he couldn't do, he turned it into the city dump and then made a ton of money. I mean, how bad is that? You, for years, have tried to plant and grow, and you can't, and you go, well, let's use it as a dump, and all of a sudden, money starts rolling in, you know? But my dad thought, when I was 8 years old, and also when I was 9, but at 8 years old, getting to the end of the school year, he thought what would be a great idea is to send me to the farmer that he worked for as a kid, all the way up actually through as an adult, and I worked that summer on his farm. As an 8 year old, I am still paying for counseling to get through this. that is child abuse. I don't know if you know, but that is literally child abuse. And I was like, did you want to get rid of me for a while? I mean, you didn't get rid of my sisters during that summer. I can literally remember the room I was in, and that first morning, they woke me up. It was a huge family, the Hansons, 12 kids. And I was in one room, three bunk beds, with three of the boys, and I slept on the floor. And I'll never forget, they're waking me up, and they said, come on, we gotta get going. And I remember waking up going, what? We gotta get going. We gotta do what? We gotta get out, take care of the chickens. I was like, what? Like, yeah, it's time to start. We gotta go. We'll take care of the chickens, then we'll come in and Mom will have breakfast ready. And I remember looking outside thinking they were trying to pull my leg. And I go, no, it's not. It's still nighttime. Little did I know, it still can be dark in morning time. And I was like, I'm not going. It's not. You're just trying to fool me. And they're like, no. Like, if you don't get up, Dad's going to come down here, and that's not good. But I remember thinking, but you don't work at nighttime. I mean, aren't chickens sleeping at nighttime? It's like 5 in the morning. Like, get up. I remember going, I don't get this, Dad. I don't, you know, why? How does this help me as an 8-year-old? By the end of the day, though, I had learned how to ride a motorcycle and how to pee on an electric fence, and really lots of fun things, really cool things. But I really, really appreciate a farmer. He's hard work. It is just hard work. I'm starting out with the idea of the farmer, even though it's not in Scripture that way, because one of the things that you learn working on a farm is there's a whole lot of crap. The farm that I worked on, dairy farm, there was probably 60 head. And you'd walk through that barn, and you just got used to it, you know. You'd walk through that barn, and it seemed like every other cow was pooping. Literally, like pooping or peeing. That's all they did, eat, poop, and pee. And one of my jobs as an 8-year-old was take this big wide-head shovel and just scrape along the edge like a gigantic wide gutter and scrape and get the poop that spilled over the top and scoop it in and scoop it in. And, you know, for the longest time, I never ever had this thought until about a year ago. That poop has to go somewhere. Right? And every day, that whole thing filled up with poop. A lot. Most dairy states have what's called a manure management program. You have to manage your manure. You may not be a farmer here, but I'm going to say it again. You have to manage your manure. You've got manure. I've got manure. If this was a secular audience, I would use a whole different word. I always have somebody, typically someone, this is a side note, someone comes up and goes, you know, what you said was offensive. And here's my opinion on that. Maybe this is just to justify me. I own a gym. It's pretty loud, crazy, obnoxious, and guys are, you know, it's a gym, not a health club, not a fitness center. I have found, typically, when you say or do something and someone's offended, it's not the non-Christian, and it's not the Christian, and by Christian I mean really who loves Christ. See, because the people that I consider Christians are the ones who are bleeding to see other people led to Christ just like I am. So it's not the non-Christian who's offended, and it's not the Christian who's offended, it's the religious person who's offended. I don't really have time to worry about what a religious person thinks. There, I've now, that is my little note at the bottom. Not all views shared in this pulpit are the views shared by Pastor Merrill. Okay. You have a lot of manure, and you have to manage your manure. Here's the one thing I love about all of these roles that Paul gives, is none of them are standalone roles. I've never been to a farm where it's just a farmer. It doesn't happen. You have to have, you know, have you ever heard of the farmhand? You got to usually, on a big farm, have 2 or 3 farmhands. Usually you have a big family. You have all these different things that help you pull this off. But you have to manage your manure. And here's why. Because if you don't manage your manure, it affects everything else going on in the farm. You're planting, you're sowing, you're reaping, your livestock, the health, the cleanliness, everything. Here's how you manage your manure according to the state of Minnesota. Number one, or this is how people manage their manure. Number one, they bury it. Farmers for years would try to bury manure, dig a huge hole, bury it off somewhere, cover it up. You know what happens to it? Nothing. In fact, when you uncover it 20 years later, it's as fresh and as gross and as disgusting and as smelly as when you first put it in there. Nothing happens to it when you bury it. And all of a sudden, someday, some workers go out and they bought farmland and they're going to turn it into a housing project, and they start to dig, and it's like, holy smokes! Somebody buried some manure here. I like to say this a lot when I'm preaching to my church. Have you ever been in a family where you're kind of talking, and maybe there's a new person in the family, and you start to say, they start to say something, and someone goes, don't go there, don't go there. Have you ever heard that? I go there. You need to go there. You need to not bury your stuff. You need to go there and you need to deal with it. Number two, they leave it. They just fill up a huge dumpster, truck, whatever it is, and they would take all the manure and they would just drive it out and they would just leave it somewhere on the farm, out in the open, and they would think that over time, the rain and the elements and whatever would happen would just take care of it. That's not the case. Usually, manure can become so toxic, it actually can then start to kill things rather than help things. You can't just go dump it somewhere. Here's one of the problems with our society. We think that if I go and I tell you all my problems, I'm working through them. No, you just dumped them all on me. Now we both feel crappy. Thank you. You didn't help either of us, you know? I'm sorry life is tough for you, but now I feel really bad about your life as well. I'm having hard enough time to find time to feel bad about my life. Just dumping it somewhere doesn't get rid of it. So the third thing is they talk about how you turn it into compost. And then how you use that to feed the rest of your fields, the rest of your crops. I've learned in my life that to deal with my crap, I've got to have a plan, but I have to turn it into compost. Compost takes time. There's a process. There are steps you go through. It's usually enclosed. Usually you have to add things. It takes a lot of time. You have to continually mull it over. I've learned in my life to be the man that I need to be. I got to take my stuff. I got to talk to other people. I got to add things to it. I got to think it through. I got to mull it over. I got to take it to God. And then that's the stuff in my life that makes the rest of my life that much better. When guys and many times husbands and wives come into my office and they talk to me about their marital problems, they look at Kim and I, and we've been married now almost 30 years. They look at Kim and I and they think we just got the greatest marriage in the world, and you probably don't understand, Pastor, and I just laugh. I go, man, what you guys are going through, I would have killed to go through what you're going through. Because in my marriage, I mean, there were 20 opportunities when I could have walked away and people would have not blamed me. And they said, well, he got a divorce. But did you hear what his marriage was like? But here's the thing. When I sit down, all of those things in my past, and when I sit down with couples that are going through it, man, it makes it so much easier to deal with issues in their life because of the issues in my life that I managed, that I took care of. Life's tough. It's tough being a man of God. There's a lot of crap, but you deal with it. The next example he uses is that of a soldier. I love this idea of a soldier because in our concept as a soldier, we think soldier, you know, Navy, Marine, Army, all of those things. And that's great. But back then, that concept of a soldier is literally, they broke it down into the smallest of element. That a Roman soldier had 12 square feet that they were designed and trained to defend. So when you were trained as a soldier, there were these 12 square feet that you were designed and created and trained to defend. And you went through incredible struggle and training. And you were yelled at and you were, I mean, nowadays if we treated our soldiers that way, there'd be lawsuits. But you were trained and beat, and when you were trained, you literally were trained. There was another guy with a sword, not a plastic whoopee cushion. Like, okay, let's do this now. It was hand. If you failed training, they were burying you. You get what I'm saying? So it says life is like being a soldier. Here's a great concept. Just because you're a soldier doesn't mean you're an army. Just because you're a man who's a Christ follower doesn't make you an army. You need other men. You have to have other men. You might be someone who believes in Jesus, lives for Jesus, wants to make that walk and that talk and make it real. But make no mistake, just because you're a soldier in God's army doesn't mean you're in the army. You need to enlist everyone. One of the greatest ideas behind being a soldier is that concept of being an army. If a Roman soldier was caught not doing his duty, many times he and the men that were with him lost their life. Alexander the Great, one of the greatest conquerors, one of the top 10 greatest conquerors in our history. Incredible story. He's just marching through the continent, just wiping nations out. And there's a story told that they get to this gigantic city, and it's on a hill, and it's a 60-foot brick wall all the way around the city. And so it's kind of like on a cliff. So it's a half circle, and the backside is on the cliff. You can't get to it. And this city had been, for centuries, people tried to break this king and, you know, conquer this city. And so when Alexander the Great finally gets there, he's got his hundreds of thousands of men around it, and he goes out to the gate and he tells this king, he says, send message that if the king gives up, we'll be kind. But if he doesn't give up and doesn't surrender, we will destroy this place and burn it to the ground. And so the king comes out of the gate and he says, no one has ever conquered our city. What makes you think you can conquer our city? And Alexander turns to one of the thousands in a rank and he says, about face, and the men turn. And he says, march. And then he looks back at the king and he says, I promise you, I will do whatever it takes to crush you. And as he's talking, the men are walking off the cliff. I will do everything within my power to crush you. I will, when we get in there, I will burn you at the stake in front of all your people, and then I will burn. And he just starts going on and on, and the men just keep walking off the cliff. Not a word. 20, 40, 60, 80, 100. And the king keeps looking, and the men just keep marching off the cliff. And the king goes, enough, 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 okay, okay. And he realizes, if you have men that will do anything for you, you'll stop at nothing to crush our city. And right there he said, we give up. If you, as a Christian man, begin to link arms with other Christian men, you would be amazed at how quickly things are easier for you, how many citadels and walls in your life come down. You'll be amazed at how many other men you attract. The greatest point about that story is when that king gave up the city, men from that city volunteered and wanted to serve Alexander the Great. See, I've had stories in my life like this where you have a huge need in your life. And someone comes along, three or four men come along, and they meet that need in your life. And friends or people that you've tried to witness to hear about it, and they go, why would they do that? Why would they? Well, that's what we do as Christ followers.
we truly support one another. We sacrifice for one another. We give to one another. And it's through that they go, maybe I do want to be a part of this. Tell me more. We are soldiers. Psalm 101, verse 6. Great, because David just sticks this little verse in there. But if you know David's life, it really sums it up. He says, I choose the men around me, for they will minister to me. I choose the men around me. I am that guy, and just take this for what it's worth. I'm that guy that everybody wants to be his friend. Some of you know what I'm talking about, right? It's like some of you want a friend. I don't want any more friends. I got enough friends. Everyone wants my time, wants to talk, wants to text, wants to call, wants a Facebook. You know, I called you, didn't call me back. Yeah, well, you're one of 800 calls. Hey, we should hang out sometime. Yeah, we shouldn't. I'm drained. And I've had to learn more than ever this verse. I have to choose the men in my circle to minister to me. Because I feel like I give and I give and I give and I give and I give. Part of it's my personality. I go to the gym, I give, I give, I give. I go to church, I give, I give, I give. I go to Cub Food, I give, I give, I give. I'm just kind of that way. So all the more, I have to choose the men that are in my inner circle to minister to me. What a difference in your life if you just took time, piece of paper, sat down, maybe you and your wife. I need to choose 5 to 8 men to be in my circle and just say, I need you in my circle. I need you to sharpen me. I need you to minister to me. I need you to be around me. I need to spend more time with you than with everyone else. I mean, just, you'd be amazed at the little army that you create and how you would promote and push and motivate one another to serve God. Because we've all been there. We've all been around that guy who's just lit for Jesus, and you come away and you're lit for Jesus. Why not find those people and put them in your inner circle? Psalm 106, or 101:6, he chooses the men that will minister to him. Last example Paul uses is that of an athlete. Back then he talks about the crown that they compete for. They compete for a crown that will wither, fade, and burn. The crown was, it was olive leaves, and it was wound in this crown, and you've probably seen pictures of it, and they put it on them, and there's a lot of recognition. I heard a story told years ago, and it had such a huge impact on me, and I don't know why, because I was still pretty young, and I've always been kind of a go-get-em type of thing. But it was an older gentleman, and he was talking and sharing about how, and he, I believe he actually worked with my grandpa for TWA. And he said, my whole life was to get advancement, 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 climb up the corporate ladder, make more money, get a better house, get a bigger car, get a 2-car garage, get a 3-car garage, just go for it, go for it. Put rings on my wife's hands, go on vacations, all these things. And he said, after 50 years, I retired. And on the last day of my retirement, they gave me a gold watch. And I drove home, and I was looking at my gold watch, and I thought, this is it? This was it. And he said he literally found himself driving around the city going, this was it? 45 years, and this is, this I think I missed something. Because all of a sudden you realize the houses and the cars and the jewelry and the trips. And after 45 years, he gets a retirement plan, he gets a pension, he gets all those things, and he gets a gold watch. But yet, he said the watch symbolized the fact that that was, I just gave 45 years of my life for stuff that's going to burn? You got to be kidding me. What a fool I am. See, if there's one thing that I know, I have to leave a legacy. I have to make change. I can't live my life for things. I have to make a change. You have to live your life for a purpose greater than yourself. You have to live your life for something eternal. Or you, at the end of your life, even if you're a pastor and it's for selfish reasons, if you didn't live your life for eternal reasons, man, it's going to feel like a complete waste. I love, Dave, you had me this morning when you shared that story about that 22-year-old girl who came up and talked about how you spoke into her life. You know, not to brag, but many times I have people stop me and say, you said this, you did that, you prayed here, you did that. And it so touched me, it so moved me, it so impacted me. Man, that's what life's about. No one's ever come up to me and said, man, I saw you in that really, you know, this is a really horrible example. Well, I saw you in that really nice car. I was really impressed by your car. I drive a crappy gold Toyota Camry. You can notice it's out there. It's the one with the smash headlight and bald tires. And I'm happy for it. I'm not complaining. But no one ever said, came up to me and said, you know, wow, I saw that really big rock on your hand, or I saw you in that cool house with that new car, or whatever, whatever. You know, the things that matter when people come up and said, hey, you prayed for my mom and she got healed. You witnessed to my sister. You, eternal things are what matter. Eternal things are the things that, when I stand before God, he's not going to judge me on my cars or my house or my trips. He's not going to say, you went to the Bahamas 2 years in a row? That was a mistake. It's about eternal things. As an athlete, they competed for this crown that was going to dry up and burn. We spent our whole lives chasing after things that are going to dry up and burn. I was listening. This is just a great place to use this example. I'm a huge Walter Payton fan. Huge Chicago Bears fan. And Walter Payton, if you were my age and you grew up, who didn't just love Walter Payton? I'll never forget watching him play in college. I was, I think, in eighth grade, and my brother-in-law, who was then dating my sister, he looked at him and he said, that dude's going to do things, man. When he gets to the NFL, he's going to do things. And so his name just kind of stuck out in my head. And then when he was drafted by the Bears, started playing for the Bears, I just following him. And he played 13 seasons. 13 seasons, only missed one game. And he'll tell you that he could have played that game, but his coach told him, you can't play that game, you're hurt. But he said, I would have played. Never ran out of bounds. Ever. The night that he broke Jim Brown's rushing record, they announced he's just rushed 16,726 yards. I think it was Don Meredith who said, but remember, that's getting knocked down every 4.4 yards by a 300-pound lineman. Life's tough. There's a reason why Paul uses this analogy that we are to be athletes. We train, we push, we go. There's a journalist out there, Don Yeager. He's one of the top sports journalists. I know way more than I've ever wanted to know about sports journalists because my son has become a sports journalist. Don Yeager, he's spent his life writing articles about some of the greatest athletes in the world. And he said one of the things that he thought motivated athletes was winning. I want to win. I want to win. I want to be number one. And he said he found in the elite athlete, the Michael Jordan, the Serena Williams, the Tiger Woods, when he would interview them, he said it was never about winning. The greatest motivation, they didn't want to lose. They hated losing. And He talks about an interview with Michael Jordan, and when Michael Jordan was cut from his high school basketball team his freshman year, he lost out to a 6'7" dude. And he said when Michael Jordan went home that day, he said, I never, ever will accept losing. Great story. When Michael Jordan was inducted into the Hall of Fame, he invited that 6'7" kid who beat him out. Had him sit right in front. I don't know if that's just payback or was being nice. Remember me? But he said, I will never accept losing. As followers of Christ, I think we have to get to that point where we never accept losing. I want the absolute best in every area of my life, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, physically, but spiritually especially. I never want to feel like I didn't give it my all. Here's what drives me nuts. Talk to people, yeah, just spiritually, I don't feel it anymore. I'm not on fire. I'm not. And I go, have you given it your all? Please don't waste my time and come and complain to me if you haven't given everything you have to your spiritual walk at least 3 years. But at least for 3 years, give it everything. Have you fasted? Have you prayed? Have you gotten into a men's Bible study? Have you confessed? Have you journaled? Have you done everything you can? And then when you feel like you've done everything you can to serve and love and know God, after 3 years, then if it's not cutting it for you, okay. All right. Go do whatever then, I guess. But don't come and complain to me that your spiritual walk is tough or hard or not joyful or not powerful when you haven't given everything you have to it. It's like the guy in the gym who's always hurt, always injured, has a ton of stories about how much he used to lift. Just like, shut up and get under the bar. Get work done. That's what we always say in our gym. Get work done. Romans chapter 8, verse 35, Paul continues on this theme. He says, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, distress, persecution, famine, nakedness, danger, sword? Life's tough, right? He gets it. Paul gets it. As it is written, for your sake we are being killed all the day long. We are regarded as sheep to be slaughtered. Life's tough. No, in all things we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. For I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus. He says we are more than conquerors. One of my favorite stories of all time. More than conquerors. Paul is saying in all of these things, as tough as it is, as hard as it is, as many things that are going to come at you in your marriage, your life, your finances, your kids, your relationships with in-laws or your own parents or whatever it is, as hard as it is, you can be more than a conqueror. Love the story of the kid who's an MMA fighter and he gets up every morning and he trains and he fights and he trains and he fights and there's going to be a huge fight in his hometown. Everyone's excited about. It's going to be the light heavyweight against the up-and-coming light heavyweight. And probably about 4 or 5 months before the fight happens, the light heavyweight tears an MCL. Or the light heavyweight contender tears an MCL. They don't know what to do. All this money's on the line. All this advertising. And I'm just going to add my own insight here. Dana White sees this kid who's got a pretty good record. He's kind of an unknown. And he calls him up and he says, hey, you probably heard the guy is supposed to fight the champion towards MCL. And it's in your hometown. And we kind of like that Rocky story. You know, would you be willing to just kind of buckle down and really train your hardest? And we'll pitch you as the hometown hero against the champion. And this kid's like, yeah, man, I would love, just give me the opportunity. So he gets up that morning. He's got a little less than 5 months to prepare, and he gets up that next morning, like he always does, at 5 a.m. And he eats his breakfast, which is oatmeal and some raisins, a few almonds, 3 eggs, some water, and then a piece of fruit. And then he packs his lunch, which is a chicken breast or some tuna, and some almonds, and some rice cakes with some water, some broccoli, a couple eggs, and he heads to the gym. And he gets to the gym, and right away he starts with some sit-ups, and then some jumping jacks, and then he does some push-ups. Then he hits the heavy bag. Then from the heavy bag, he goes to a full-body workout, and then he does a split routine like a conjugate system. Then he takes a quick shower, and he goes to work. And he works, and then at lunchtime, he pulls out his chicken breast and his broccoli and his almonds, and his yogurt, and he eats it, and then he finishes the day, gets home at around 5 o'clock. He helps his wife in the kitchen, plays with the kids, and he puts the kids down, kisses his wife, and he heads back to the gym, where then he works lower body. He's working his lower chains, hams, glutes, reverse hyper, does some box squats, belt squatter, hits the speed bag, and then goes home, takes a shower, crawls into bed with his wife. And then Tuesday morning, he gets up at 5 a.m. and he goes downstairs into the kitchen and he makes his breakfast, which is oatmeal with a couple pieces of apple and 3 eggs and some almonds. And then he packs his lunch, which is 2 chicken breasts, some oatmeal, a yogurt, some almonds, some broccoli, and then a gallon of water. And he goes to the gym that morning, Tuesday a.m., gets there at 5:45 in the morning. And then he works on some shrimp outs and some mat work and some leg presses. And then he hits the weights. He does upper body with dumbbells. He does some clean and jerks. He does some pull and press. He does some face pulls. Then he jumps in the shower and he gets to work. He works, and at lunchtime he pulls out his two chicken breasts and his yogurt and his almonds and his broccoli, and he eats it. And then he finishes the day and he runs home at 5 o'clock and he helps his wife with dinner and he plays with the kids and he goofs off and he puts them in the bed and then he kisses her goodnight. And then around 8:30 he heads back to the gym. And then he's going to do, again, some more full body. Then he's going to do some dirty boxing. Then he's going to work on submissions. Then he's going to run home. Then he's going to take a quick shower, and he's going to go to bed around 10:30. Then he's going to get up the next day, which is Wednesday at 5 a.m., and he's going to go down to the kitchen, and he's going to make his breakfast, which is some oatmeal and some yogurt and a couple slices of apple and some almonds, and he's going to get a big bottle of water. And then he's going to make his lunch, which today he's in a hurry, so it's a can of tuna, 4 rice cakes, bag of almonds, a few raisins, some water, and another yogurt. And so then he heads to the gym. And that morning, it's Wednesday morning, so what he does is he runs on the treadmill and he does HIIT, high intensity, with dumbbells and a barbell, off and on the treadmill, back and forth, back and forth. And then he has to hit the speed bag and the heavy bag, specifically with leg kicks and slip kicks. Then he gets done, and he goes and he takes a quick shower and he goes to work. And he works, and then at lunchtime, he goes to lunch and he eats his two chicken breasts or his can of tuna because he was in a hurry that day, and his 5 rice cakes and his almonds. And then he gets done, he finishes the day of work, he runs home at 5 o'clock, he goes in, he helps his wife, and he helps with the kids, and he helps with dinner, and he cleans up, he tucks the kids in, he kisses her goodnight. It's 8:30, he runs back to the gym. And now again, he does more submissions, but this is from top to bottom, bottom to top. Then he does more shrimp outs, then he does a lower leg workout, front, high quads, squats, wide, medium, deep, box squats, then belt of squats. Then he jogs on the treadmill, loosen up, then he runs home, takes a shower, and he goes to bed. Now, the next morning, it's Thursday morning. Thursday morning. He gets up at 5 a.m., he goes downstairs, he makes his breakfast, which is oatmeal. You get it? He does that every day. And then a month later, he does that every day. And then 3 months later, he gets up finally at a little past the halfway mark, and he does it again. Every day. Every day. Every day. No excuses. It's winter time. Can't get his car out of the driveway. So he puts on a sweatsuit and he jogs to the gym that morning. And he works out, and then he catches the city bus to work, and then he gets home on the city bus. And then he helps his wife, tucks the kids in. By that time, the roads are cleared. And then he still goes to the gym that night. He doesn't give up. He doesn't quit. He doesn't stop. He hates to lose. I do not accept losing. If I give it everything I have and I lose, I at least know I don't accept it, but I gave everything I had. So the night of the fight comes. It's the UFC, lights, flash, camera, noise, sound. There are a bunch of preliminary fights, which nobody cares about. And then finally, they announce his name against the champion. It's hometown hero. Everybody's yelling, screaming. He goes out there. He gets checked, everything, oiled up, puts a mouth guard on, cup check. All right, gets in the ring. Can't believe it. It's amazing. And then he sees the light heavyweight champion come through, and it's just crazy, and the music's pounding, and he's like, man, I'm just thankful, you know, that I get a shot, you know. I get paid a pretty good chunk of change here, you know, and if I win, it'd be amazing, because it's a major check, and I get a belt, and, you know, but, you know, just I'm just thankful to be here, but I'm going to give it everything I have. In the first round, he's kind of deer in the headlights. It's just survive, 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 survive. Takes a couple wicked knee kicks. Takes a couple punches to the head. Gets taken down 2 or 3 times. He's able to get up. Takes an elbow to the back of the head. Rounds over. Goes back. His ref's talking, or his coach is talking to him. Patting him down with ice. Drinking some water. And honestly, doesn't remember a word the guy says. Doesn't remember a word his coach says. He's just looking at the other dude who looks like he just got out of the shower. You know, like, how come he doesn't look, you know, what's going on? He goes out there second round, pretty much the same thing, but he gets a few shots in. After the second round, he's spent, he's gassed. It's over, it's done. This guy's going to attack me out the third round. I know it, I'm fried. But his coach goes, you got up every day. You trained every morning. You didn't miss a morning, every night. You did it for this third round, and you did it for the fourth round and the fifth round. You're not going to give up. This is what you prepared for. He goes out there, third round, makes it. And after, if you know anything about fighting, after the third round, all of a sudden the adrenaline kicks in. And he goes out fourth round, and he actually wins the fourth round. He's still down three rounds. Fifth round, final round, championship. They go out there. They start fighting. And the kid, it's a crazy move, and you got to be cocky to do it. But you act like you're going to do a takedown, and when you lunge, you throw your foot forward, and that guy typically pulls back and drops. And when he pulls back and drops, this guy, when he lunges, comes back, hooks him under the head, wraps his legs around his waist, goes down to the ground. Fights, but you're sweaty, and the more you fight, the deeper that gets in, and the more you fight, the deeper the arm gets in, and he does a over-the-top choke hold, chokes the guy out, gets up. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? People are going crazy. The place is lit. Dana White comes out, raises his hand. They wrap that gigantic belt that looks like it could be a sled, you know, that you could sit on and slide down the snow in. That's what I always think of. I don't know, maybe it's me. They talk to him, interview him. Unbelievable. He's crying. And he's thinking, I wish my wife would have been here. I wish my wife would have been here. But his wife's like, I'm not going. I'm not going to go to the fight. I'm not going to listen to the fight. I hate watching you get beat up. I don't want to know anything about it. You just come home and tell me about it. I don't want to know. Like any good wife. So you leave the ring, you go down, there's tons of photographers, tons of interviews, people want to talk to you. Dana White wants to meet with you. Now there are sponsors, man. Will you sponsor our product and all these things, and just thing after thing after thing. And finally Dana pulls them off to the side. Hey, here's some of the fights we want to line up with you now. Here's some things we want to do, you know, and you know, take the belt home, take the trophy home, show it off. By the way, here's your check. It's cool, $375,000. Puts everything in his duffel bag. He fought in his hometown, so by the time he walks out to his pickup truck, which as he looks at goes, I'm probably going to get a new pickup truck. Throws his duffel bag in the back, drives home. His wife swore that she was going to turn off all media, phone, everything, and not. She said, you know, when you come home, I'm just going to be there for you. I'm going to love you. Because no one expected this guy to win. He gets out, and when he pulls up, he can see she's standing in the doorway of the house. Arms are folded. She's got one of his sweatshirts on, and she's just standing there. She heard the pickup pull up, because that's that kind of truck. Just standing there, inside the doorway. He does one of these numbers, gets out. Grabs a duffel bag, pulls it up over the top. And she's just like, oh. Sorry. Walks up, walks inside, throws his duffel bag on the floor. She goes, I love you, baby. You try your hardest. She's kissing him. And he goes, wow, he just beat me. Like a redheaded stepchild, just beat me every round, beat me. And she's like, it's okay, I love you. It was an awesome opportunity. And he goes, wow, he goes, it was cool though. I got to hang out with people. And afterwards, Dana gave me some cool things. And he unzips his duffel bag. And he goes, yeah, he gave me this belt. And she's kind of like, what? She's like, you won? She said, yeah, baby, I won. She jumps up in his arms, wraps her legs around him, kissing him. Now it's all of a sudden, I knew you could do it. I knew you could do it. And he says, yeah. And Dana gave me one more thing. And he said to give it to you. And he reaches down in his backpack and he pulls out the check. And he says, this is for you. Spend it any way you want. So he does all the training, never misses a day, does all the sacrifice, takes all the bruises, the punch, the kicks, the dirty boxing. Then he goes in that ring for 5 rounds and gets pummeled by the world champion. And he gives her the check. She's more than a champion. Paul says, therefore, you are more than conquerors in Christ Jesus. Life's tough, but he's already won for you. He's already won for me. It's full of death and separation and killing and nakedness and danger and sword and tribulation and persecution and famine and distress. But we're more than conquerors through Christ. We are more than conquerors through Christ. Do not try to sell me that your Christian walk is flat and bad and horrible and hard and tough, and it's not worth it if you're not given everything you have. Because I promise you, and I stand today before you, that if you give it everything you have, no matter how bad it gets, it's worth it. You'll get up every morning and you'll realize, I'm more than a conqueror. I'm more than a conqueror. He already won. He already did everything he could. I'm just here to live for him and to collect the check. And it's worth it. Let's pray. Father, Lord, I ask that this afternoon as we walk out of here, we walk out of here with your Spirit just brimming over the top in us, that we realize we take our stand as more than a conqueror. You've already done the work. You've already done the sacrifice. You've already done everything there is, Lord. But I pray today that we would understand that we are conquerors through you. And life's tough. And Paul writes ridiculous distress, pain, problems, persecution, famine, sword, darkness, all these things. And yet in all of those things, we are more than conquerors because you've already won. And when we wake up and we see our finances or our family or our job or our issues or the sickness or whatever it is, we laugh because we go, ah, I've already won. I am more than a conqueror because of who you are and what you've done. Father, if there's anyone here this morning specifically who's carrying that burden, like they feel like just wiped out, burdened, Lord, you would just minister to them today. You'd help them understand that you are there to carry that burden, that you want to be there. You want to be there through not only your Spirit, but through other men to help them get through this time, to be, to experience that feeling of being more than a conqueror. If you just continue to keep your eyes closed, you know, we like to think as men that we're tough if we can do this or do that. And sometimes the toughest thing a man can do is, like Dave said earlier today, is just be vulnerable. And I'm going to ask you men here today to do something incredibly tough. I'm going to ask you to be vulnerable in just a second. If you find yourself in a situation where you feel overwhelmed, maybe it's once again, here I am with this issue, overwhelmed, don't know what to do, scared, afraid to talk to my wife about it, don't know what the doctors will say, the lawyer will say, just like you're drowning and you have that smile on your face, or you just really haven't told anybody, but you are just overwhelmed. I'd ask this morning you just take some courage and just stand up right where you're at. It might be only one person, it might be 10 people, but if that's you, just stand up right now. Thank you so much for your honesty. Men, if you can't live for Jesus inside the church walls, you'll never live for Jesus outside the church walls. So those of you who are sitting, would you open your eyes and look around to those that are standing? And would you find them, gather around them and pray? And if you're here today and you don't have a relationship with Jesus so that you don't feel stupid, just walk over and copy what somebody else does. But find someone who's standing, put your arms around them, and I want you to take 2 or 3 minutes and I want you to pray for them. You are their army. You make them an army. As soldiers gather around them and pray, you make them an army. Go ahead and just pray for those there. Okay, men, listen to me. It's not enough to pray today. 2 things are required. Those who stood up, you need to be vulnerable and let people know what's going on. And those who gathered, you need to be there for them now. There's nothing that makes us look more ridiculous as a church, as Christian men, is to pray and walk away and not do anything. So take time, if you stood up, to find people you trust, and or if you prayed for someone and there's a connection there, find out what they need and help them. It might be just simply, I'll continue to pray for you. It might be a text. It might you give them $5. It might be advice. I don't know what it is. But now, it's not enough today to just pray and walk away. Make sure you get involved in their need. We're an army. We have different bases around the world, but we're all in the same army, and we need to be involved in each other's life. Amen? Amen. Father, we pray tonight, today, as we leave here, that we leave as that army. That we leave as those men who have gathered together to do damage, to support one another, to carry out your mission, to be faithful and to obey your orders. Lord, we ask that you follow us, carry us, cover us, protect us. In your name, amen.
Guys, would you please express your appreciation for Garth coming and sharing his heart with us? Okay, just to wrap this up, a couple of things. If anybody here, I've got 2 Bibles that were donated to me from the Everyman's series, the Everyman's Bible, that my uncle helped in the editing, helped in some of the narratives and that are in here. It's an outstanding resource. Just take a two guys afterwards that maybe don't have a Bible, don't know where to start. You can come up and see me, and the Bible is yours. So there's that. Secondly, on your way out, surveys, put them at the table there. And drop your lanyard things on the table also on your way out. And make sure and see Bob and David about the Joe Gibbs event if you're interested in that. Remember, with your surveys, you get your Chick-fil-A card. A couple shirts left out there for $10. And one thing I want to do, last thing. You guys paid your admission to be here. You guys covered our expenses with your payment, covered our food costs, speakers, all that. So I thought, you know what? I don't want guys to come in here and feel any obligation to do an offering. But I just feel impressed right now that through what Garth is doing, the work he's doing, planting a church up in Minnesota, and it's a rough go. And there's cost involved with that. So what I want to do is take up an extra offering, feel no obligation to give unless it's from God. And if I could just get a couple guys that'd be able to stand at the back. We're not going to walk down, pass down the plates. But as you're heading out, if you just feel that that's something that you want to do, this is above and beyond to bless Garth and the work that he's doing for the Lord, feel free to give that. If it is a check, just make it out to the church. We'll make sure it all gets to him. So I just want to end with that. So thank you, guys. You did great. You came out on a Saturday morning. There's no place better to be. Thank you very much. Remember, Garth will be here preaching tonight at 6 and tomorrow at 9:30. Take care.
I've got my memories always inside of me.